Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Before we just get into this Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, can I just say, JB, compliments on looking more rugby than I've ever seen a man look.
Thank you very much. Really working on
Phil, myself. Could you describe his get-up?
So, hunter wellies,
yep.
Cords,
yep.
Blue cords, a nice zip-up woolen...
Chunky knit.
Yeah, chunky knitwear, and one of the most incredible hats I've ever seen. Is it kangaroo leather, that?
It is kangaroo leather, yeah. It's a, where is it? Cuda Traders? Very, very nice.
It's lovely.
It's dog walking attire.
It suits you, Jay.
And yep. He's holding a bunch of keys, which have a Volvo key on them as well.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. And so
with
no further ado, let's get into some rugby in the latest Egg Chasers podcast. Oh, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
I'm Tim, the rugby-clad man to my right, and in front of me is JB, as you've heard.
Good day, Tim.
And Phil's here as well.
Hi, Tim.
Right. Phil, you're wearing some lovely Canterbury get-up. Equally rugby.
It's nice, isn't it?
And look at this. Canterbury as well.
Oh, very nice.
They do some great stash.
Thanks very much for downloading. We're on the Acast app. We're on iTunes. You should subscribe, and then you'll get every episode of the podcast delivered straight to you. You don't even have to bother with that. So, I want to start with this, gents. England's Six Nations performance was unacceptable, was one of the headlines that came out following last
weekend.
Said who? Said the head of the RFU.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name?
And various other people. I can't even remember now. It doesn't really matter, but basically they said not winning the Six Nations, even on points, was unacceptable.
It's almost like they forget that other teams are trying to win it as well. It's not like an abject failure. There are other teams trying to play.
Martin Corey came out and echoed the sentiment, said, yeah, completely agree. It's unacceptable.
Martin Corey, after his stint in the England captaincy, can keep quiet and stick to his Holland and Borough adverts.
Richard Wigglesworth came out and said, yeah, it's fair cop. And you know what? I think my reaction was, hey, that's a bit harsh. Actually, now I think about it, that's what a team that want to win a World Cup should say.
I don't know.
Is that we're not happy that we didn't win every game.
Choice of language is interesting. Mm. It's unacceptable. It's disappointing, certainly. But to say it's unacceptable when Ireland are the strongest they've been in, well, as far as I can remember, Wales are not exactly weak, and then the resources that France have available to them, although they're obviously underperforming, it's hardly unacceptable. It's a bit disappointing given where England want to be.
The question should be, is that England team playing at its full potential? And I'd say probably against Wales, they probably did, actually.
Certainly in the second half, yeah. They really did. But then in patches against France, they did. And in patches for the rest of the tournament, they did. But
I think England's strategy for winning the World Cup is, if they speak enough about winning the World Cup, they will win the World Cup. They've got all the management lingo and...
I saw that Clive Woodward came out and he echoed that sentiment as well. But he always...
He can say what he wants, though.
But he always brings it back to, like, what we did when we won it.
Nope.
And it's 12 years ago, everything's moved on.
I don't know.
It's a different...
He can say what he wants.
He has earned the right to say what the hell he wants, I guess. I suppose we couldn't have hoped... Well, we could have hoped, but we were never going to get a weekend of rugby like we got in the final weekend of the Six Nations, but...
Well, the first 20 minutes of this weekend was awesome, and then it went downhill.
and it finished. I was at the AJ Bell Stadium for Sale v Gloucester. Oh,
goodness me.
Which was a bit of a damp squib of a match in every sense. I was there because my lad was playing at half-time in the tag rugby.
How did he get on?
Yeah, good. He, do you know what? I was
did he get him signed up?
I couldn't have been... No, generally, I was really proud of him because the team that they were playing against... didn't have enough for two teams to play tag, and he volunteered to go on their team.
Nice.
Which, I just thought, he's 7 years old. I just thought, yeah, good lad.
Rugby attitude.
Yeah,
that,
good
isn't
rugby
it?
Attitude. Yeah.
This isn't quite rugby attitude.
Let the boys play
still.
Is what he was saying.
Exactly what you're saying. We went to Birkenhead. No, we didn't. We went to New Brighton away with the second team, and I was dropped to the bench. So I was utilising the spirit of rugby by trying to persuade New Brighton to let me play for them. Because they only had like 13 players, and our coach would not let me play for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You 13 just... players? This yeah. is like level 6?
No, this was second team.
Oh, okay.
Oh right, yeah. Okay.
And also when we went on tour, I was very upset about getting subbed against the Welsh team, so I wanted to play for them instead. A few times.
So Tim, two of your direct family members played Premiership rugby this weekend.
This is true. My brother and my son played, and both chalked up victories as well.
Ah, so you're part of like a
dynasty.
Dynasty,
or,
yeah.
Or I'm letting the side down woefully. I'm here talking about it at least.
To be fair to Louis, I think Gloucester could probably do with him. He'd probably do a good job there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too bad. Yeah. Let's go back to the first match of the weekend, because I think I can imagine there's going to be some talking points that are going to come out of that, which, well, there's a few refereeing decisions to talk about, a few cards and stuff.
Let's just start. What an awesome display of rugby for the first 20 minutes. It was an absolute firecracker.
With two of the most exciting attacking wings Britain going head to head.
Anyone who does not think Christian Wade should play for England is mental. Absolutely mental.
I still think there's...
Him and Jonathan Joseph would be terrifying. What would you do? And Kyle Eastmond.
You'd run Julian Surveyor or George North at him all day.
Well, Northampton tried that.
Or kick behind him.
Yeah.
Or kick on top of him.
But as long as he keeps scoring. I mean, he was scoring like a try every 10 minutes.
He did score 3 tries in the game.
Yeah.
Do you embrace the positives of someone, or do you acknowledge the positives but...
Pick Brad Barrett.
Pick Brad Barrett, yeah.
I imagine if I played with Brad Barrett, I'd absolutely love it. But Christian Wade, as a spectator, is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
They should have him, they should have Joseph, they should have Watson.
Having someone like Brad Barrett, I'm not necessarily advocating having Brad Barrett in England, but it allows you to have more players like Joseph and like Watson, like Noel, because they're more exciting. And so having that kind of pragmatic, solid approach from one guy.
After last week's rugby, where it is attack, 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 if you're making the other team score points, you're in an advantageous situation. I think that's what Wade would allow you to do. Because every time they go ahead, the other team have to open up, and it affects their defensive structure and their game plan and all the rest of it. I just can't see any argument for keeping him out the squad.
Well, all he can do is perform how he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep scoring.
He can't do any more than that.
Yeah. By the way, the whole Wasps team is a wonderfully built team now. I mean, they've gone from kind of middle of the road, bit boring, to just having this big old pack, big mobile pack, massive back row, which obviously I love. And these backs they've got now are so exciting.
Yeah, they've got a lot of pace.
Daily.
Yeah.
Gas to burn. It's not just buying in guys. They have got some young guys coming through as well. Lozovsky.
Yeah.
He looks all right.
He looks pretty tidy, doesn't he?
Yeah, really good. Really, really good all round. That was his first Premiership start as well, wasn't it?
Is that right?
Yeah. Hold on, I can't believe I'm having to reach for the facts button already.
Fact.
There you go. I know we expected it from Northampton. They racked up 50 points.
Who cares?
Marshalled by Stephen Myler really well.
Now, let's talk about this. This isn't a win. It's not a moral victory in any sense. The game was completely and utterly ruined by the ref. Now, before I go on and talk about these horrific cards...
Say how you feel, Jay.
Yeah. George North has got some serious problems. I mean, we are talking real big problems. He is going out every time he's touched. Every time he's touched, it ends up with him being unconscious, which is, you know, ask anyone who watches boxing and that kind of thing. These things are they get compounded with time. They get worse and worse and worse. And if it's not settled, I'm worried he might miss the World Cup. I think they might have to rest him for 6 months, send him surfing to Newquay. He's on the wing as well, so it's not like he's getting a lot of head contact. It's not like he's a prop or something.
No.
So I'm really, really, concerned for him, because if this carries on, it could be a very short career to a player who potentially could be one of the best Lords ever seen.
Yeah, he's en route to be one of the leading all-time international try scorers and one of the leading all-time international test caps.
Yeah.
So it's worrying. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Northampton and Wales, because Wales now don't have a game until the autumn, so they will really be pushing for to have an extended period of rest. Whereas Northampton, obviously, have got Heineken Cup, European Champions Cup, they've got the Premiership playoffs, so they will want him playing as much as possible.
Oh, it's a big investment.
But they also have to think about his safety and that kind of side.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, you might have George North for a couple more games and not see him again. Full stop.
Yeah.
Full stop. Now.
Go on then. Now, come on.
Right. This referee, 24 years old, he's there for a reason. He's actually a very good ref. I actually quite like the majority of the stuff he did. But he's doing the one thing I hate. He's reffing outcomes. He's not reffing the situation. And me and Phil had a long discussion about this afternoon. There are, I reckon, maybe 10, 20 laws in rugby that can be scrapped altogether. They can just go. Did you know it is illegal to kick the ball out of someone's hands?
Which is why the red card was given.
Yeah, he's red carded for kicking the ball out of George North's hands. So the
ref perceived that the penalty was for attempting to kick the ball out of his hands when he scored a try, and in committing that act of foul play, he made contact with his head, which the outcome of which was him getting knocked out, George North getting knocked out, and that is the red card.
So what you're saying is, and this was my sort of feeling on it as well, that the referees actually looked at it, and had it been watched on a videotape, and you saw it, and you didn't know whether George North was knocked out or what the consequence of it was, and you just went stop, and then you see a black screen, what decision do you make? You're saying it's a very, very different decision than what he made purely because George North was sparked out on
exactly.
the floor.
Exactly right.
There's been directive given that you have to take the outcome into
consideration. Directive given? What?
I was going to say I did some referee courses when I was a teacher, and Jay, I can tell you it is relevant. It's part of the sanction process to take into account the effect it had. So, for example, actually, for what it is, one punch might have been a half punch, might not actually be that bad. Maybe would have been a yellow card. However, if that one punch was the lit the fuse of a massive punch up that involved 30 people, that player who started it, you take into account the effect it had, and that player would probably get a red card because of the effect it had.
Now, do we all agree players have a duty of care? Is that now firmly established, unfortunately, in the rugby community? You've got a duty of care?
Yeah.
Right. So here's kind of what I was thinking about the refereeing of outcomes. If a ball goes high in the air, and we've all seen the awful injustice, which is Finn Russell and
Jarrod Payne.
Jarrod Payne, Payne-gate.
Yeah.
They got red carded or yellow carded, and one of them got bloody banned. Ridiculous. It cost Scotland at least one win, I'd say.
You've not mentioned that before, Jay, probably. Yeah. Like, you should have mentioned it more on previous podcasts.
Yeah, it annoys me. And it's all about this duty of care thing. So my point would be, what if two players went out for a ball, one of them comes down horrifically, taken out in the air, maybe has, you know, concussion, knocked out, all the awful things which mothers don't want to see. What if that happened, but they were two players from the same team? Do they still have a duty of care? Why is that ref differently to a player from a different sides jumping?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting
really
point.
Interesting.
What happens? And this is my point. Yellow carding or red carding that player isn't going to change the outcome. So why are we doing it? We're just ruining the game for everyone else.
Because the only differential you could make between a teammate and an opponent is intent, because you would never clearly intend to take out your teammate. But then that's irrelevant
Correct.
For the opponent as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's reckless. And that's the word that's used, isn't it? Reckless. And that's the word that was used in relation to Nathan Hughes and Nick Williams as well. Which we'll get onto, I'm sure.
Yeah, and there's no way there's a cowering Finn Russell wanting to wreck Dan Bigger. It just, you know, that just wasn't the situation, but he gets banned for two games. So where is the duty of care for players on the same team? And, you know, George North could easily have been knocked out by one of his own players. If it's accidental, you can't stop accidents in what is a violent contact sport.
In this occasion, and with this specific example with Nathan Hughes, I completely agree with you, to be honest. I look at it, and I've looked at it loads and loads of times, and the referee looked at it plenty of times. He asked for the help of his TMO. He got it up on the big screen. Nathan Hughes was doing that little short step thing you do as you're slowing down.
Yeah. Slowing down.
He was not swinging a foot.
Yeah,
no.
Absolutely.
He was running in a direction and then slowing down.
And it's weird because in slow motion, it actually looks less dramatic than it does. Because you usually slow motion.
Speed, yeah.
Slow motion usually makes things look a lot worse. Mm. In full, I must say, second time I watched it in real time, it did look bad. It looked just because of the drama of George North.
Yeah, George North rolling on the floor.
But well, yeah, go on, Phil.
No, I was just going to say, kind of going from that point, Nathan Hughes is slowing down. He realizes he can't get there, and George North dives to the corner. So all of a sudden, George North's head is in Nathan Hughes' path. There's no way he was trying to kick out. Nothing like that.
George North was diving. He's off his feet. Right, you can't play off your feet. That's an established law.
Did anybody else think? And this was, again, I can't say categorically this is what the case was. Did anyone else think that the TMO got the gist of that the referee was going to give a red card and tried to persuade him not to? But the TMO can't persuade him not to because that would be undermining a ref. But he said, "Why don't you have a look at it again?"
Yeah,
I got the impression the TMO was like, "Don't."
You do hear TMOs escalating. This is the thing. Everyone's happy to escalate. No one's ever really happy to de-escalate or just let things go. I am convinced now that we need to go through the laws and rip up a load of them. The knock-on can go. Kicking the ball, right. If he gave a red for kicking the ball out of his hands, which, he did, just think about this. What about when a scrum half picks up the ball and then a big grizzly forward steps over and tries to kick the ball away?
The penalty was for trying to kick the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, but a scrum half picks the ball out
of his hands. The red was the effect of that knocked a player out.
Yeah, because he made contact with a head, which then knocked a player out.
Which, going back to it, that is referees, that is part of their sanction process.
But my point would be, kicking a ball, do we even need that law? I mean, doesn't seem to me like it's a particularly good law to start with.
You'd have to be pretty flexible to do that, like open play.
We were discussing this. It'd be a terrible technique.
No, it'd be pretty risky as well, because you couldn't possibly grab someone in a tackle and do the kick. You'd have to go, I'm not going to bother with the normal tackle. I'm just going to stick my foot up.
But do you do it like a Cantona-style kick or like a...
Don't know.
Or like a can-can-style kick.
I imagine it'd be quite easy for like a Will Skelton to do it on a... Morgan Parra. I mean, I think that's the ideal scenario.
I think I'd do it because I think you would dislodge the ball and be back on your feet facing the right direction. Do you remember Guile in Street Fighter? The blonde haircut? He did the sort of kick up and then did a somersault in a kick.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's a nice way to do it.
That's the way I do it.
I reckon Christian Wade could probably do that. We asked him. He could probably do that. There's nothing Christian Wade can't do, as far as I'm concerned.
Another big... Steve, let's keep it on referees for a little bit.
Okay.
It's something that me and Phil in previous podcasts have been quite reticent to do. So I have got something up my sleeve to prove just how difficult a job it is. And how let he who cast the first stone be in a glass. Well, you know.
Very wise, stone. Tim.
What's
very
that?
Wise.
What's that phrase?
Don't know.
Anyway, you know what phrase I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what.
So we're all in agreement with Nathan Hughes that it was an unjust sending off.
It was.
Terrible, terrible decision.
And it did spoil what would have been an even better game.
Oh, it was an awesome game. It was warming up nicely
It was still a great game. There's still 80 points scored.
Mm.
But would have been a bit more.
You know, it's just...
Because that try made it 20 all as well. It was right in the balance.
I want to get rid of all cards now. I think they're nonsense.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's have a little bit of light relief from this heavy referee chat. Let's just chuck in a little curveball at this point.
Uh-oh.
This is Captain Bantos, member of Banter Squad. Run! James Haskell being collared by someone outside of the stadium. This is just a random punter at the Wasp game. Asking Haskell, now I'm assuming he's referring to his legs, asking how big James Haskell's pipes are. Do you think he's talking about his legs?
On those your arms?
Pipes. Could be legs, pipes. Could be arms.
Could be guns, I don't know. Anyway,
no, pipes or arms, I'm sure.
Could be lungs.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Yeah. I don't think that's the way Haskell took the conversation, though.
No problem, mate.
How big's your pipe?
How big's my pipe?
Yeah.
Very, very big, mate. Yeah, bigger than your pipe will ever be.
Thank you.
No problem, mate.
He said bigger than your pipe will ever be.
Wow.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think James Haskell's either his legs or his arms are certainly bigger than most people's pipe.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Good one, James.
Nick Williams.
Right, okay, so this...
A bear of a man.
Same kind of physique, same sort of brain by all accounts.
Ulster versus Cardiff.
Your boys, innit?
It was... Very early on in the game, first 5 minutes, there's a ruck where Rhys Patchell, the Cardiff fullback, is just in the side of the ruck, and his head is sticking out, and Nick Williams charges in full pace and kind of forearm, elbow, shoulder, somewhere around that region, smashes Patchell's head, and Patchell is immediately knocked out, cold, taken to hospital.
Yeah. Now, I would say, if I was in Broughton Park and I was talking to the old boys, they'd be saying, in the first ruck, make a statement, don't make them want to ruck again. Because rugby's a game about intimidation. I kind of just think that's all it was, really. It was Nick Williams seeing an opportunity, smashing into someone, and that's it. Of course, we need to consider the thoughts of mothers. But that was it. That was all it was. And there, he will be cited. And you know,
he has been cited.
There we go, yeah. And all go through the proper process, because they'll be wanting to be seen to be tough on something, which I don't know what it is.
But, so, disregarding intent for a second, Patchell's head was there, it was clear to see, and Nick Williams has charged in absolutely full pelt, and the first thing he's made contact with is Rhys Patchell's head, which is not a good thing.
Well, where was Rhys Patchell's head? It was in a mall, yeah?
It was in the mall, just on the side of the mall.
Fine, go for it. It is a game of intimidation. Rhys Patchell knows what he signed up for. We all know what we signed up for.
No, because that making contact with the head is outside the laws. You sign up to a very physical game inside the laws, and it's physical and dangerous enough inside the laws. Now, I'm going to give Nick Williams the benefit of the doubt, because he's an Ulsterman, and we all know that no one from Northern Ireland has ever done anything bad in their whole entire life.
No, absolutely not.
Throughout the whole of history. There's not a single incident at all that's happened in Northern Ireland that's any negative harm or intent.
But he's not from Northern Ireland, so there is some leeway there.
He's pretty much he's an Ulsterman now. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but it was still unbelievably reckless. And the act is, he's made contact with his head, it's caused Patchell to lose consciousness and be taken to hospital.
Yeah.
Therefore, I think the red... Well, he only got a yellow card, but I think a red card probably would have been just...
Yeah, I think reckless is the word. I don't think he intended to. He was just being hard. He was being hard, but he's 120 kilos, and the consequence of him being reckless, and way more reckless than Nathan Hughes was...
Yes, absolutely.
...is the consequence is he knocked someone out. Had it been, I don't know, who else? Who would have been in Cardiff Blues side that's really little, or someone... Tavish Noyle, let's say. Had it been him, then it might not have knocked Patchell out, but he's 120 kgs. He's a human block.
Yeah.
Nick Williams, he's cubed.
Do you not think that...
he's as deep as he is wide as he is tall.
Do you not think Nick Williams basically just did something which forwards coaches throughout history have been saying you should do that? Yeah. If you see him on the side...
Smash him.
You go into him, crazy.
Anyone's in the wrong spot on a ruck, you smash him, let them know they're going to get the hell out of there next time.
Yeah, totally.
That doesn't make it right, just because people have done it in the past.
It kind of does, though, doesn't it?
It's the sort of thing that if anyone that's still playing, and I'm sure it will have happened with you in your game at the weekend, Jay, it's the sort of thing that happens, not 120 kgs or quite with the ferocity or power of Nick Williams, but it's the sort of thing that happens every single game, every ruck.
We were told in the change room this week, on the side of rucks, when players come down, go low, snap their legs. I was thinking, like, imagine if we were successful in this. Around every ruck. It'd be horrific.
Broken leg, ambulance on, 20-minute wait. Finally get the game going again. Another broken
leg. Snapped leg.
You run out of ambulances.
Another snap. Just hold the ambulance, give him some more morphine. It seems to be less controversial in our minds, the whole Nick Williams one. Listen, we've been talking about refereeing for quite a long time, and everyone has their say, and people in the crowd have their say, and writers have their say, and all the rest of it. But it's a difficult job, and rugby couldn't exist without it, and respect for the referees is something that we all love about the game of rugby. So I want to demonstrate how difficult a job it is. I've got a few little scenarios for you two.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, this is going to be embarrassing.
All right.
Okay.
So...
I'm pretty sure... Are these like... So what's happening here? You want to tell us about...
I'm just going to give you some hypothetical situations and you're going to have to try and work out what... Well, you've got a referee. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'll get all these.
I'm pretty sure you'll have an opinion on all of these.
All right, we'll start off with this one. One of your second rows is yellow carded, leaving you with a 7-man scrum. Can the opposition maintain an 8-man scrum against you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they can. That's right. Unless under 19s and below. When you have to match like for like.
That's interesting.
Your number eight wins possession at the back of... These are all scrum-based ones. I just thought I'd pick a theme on the scrum. Your number eight wins possession at the back of the scrum. He picks up the ball, drives forward, does not bind on, but grabs the shirts of the second row and powers over to score. Try or no try?
Read it again.
Your number eight wins possession at the back of the scrum.
Okay.
He picks up the ball, drives forward, does not bind on, but grabs the shirts of the second row and powers over to score. Try or no try?
I'm going to say no try, accidental offside.
I'd say try because... No, because he's out of the scrum, isn't he? But then he's going back into the scrum.
Yeah.
So it's not
he grabs the shirt. He doesn't bind, but...
No try. No! I know exactly what I do. Play on.
It's not what you do. No.
Well, he's placed the ball down over the try line.
And let the boys play.
Is it try or no try?
I'd give that a try.
And your justification for that?
Just let the boys play. It just feels right.
Yeah, I think that would work in your assessor's report.
Yeah.
JB is right.
It's a try.
Because he didn't bind on, you're allowed to grab a shirt and it's not bound, so it's not accidental offside.
We've had two interpretations last 2 weeks in our league about what is bound and what isn't. So this week's ref was like, if your shoulders are off, you're not bound. And I found this to my detriment.
Yeah, then when you're a back row and they lift up their shoulders and you run around and smash them, the ref goes, no, he wasn't.
Oh, yeah. To be fair to this ref, he's very consistent.
I don't like it. It doesn't let the boys play that rule. It's like they sometimes. And I'm glad they've done the whole rule. I interrupted where you were going. But they've changed the rule about now it's not hands-on for the scrum half, it's ball up.
Yes.
At the back of a ruck. And that's so much better because it's such an annoying thing to get penalised for and when there's like, has the scrum half picked it up? Yeah. Has he not? Gets the ball out there easier. If the scrum half can put his hands on it, just flipping get on with it. So the scrum half rolls the ball into a scrum two-handed. It's hooked back quickly to a flanker who picks up and scores. Try or no try?
Try.
I'll read it again. The scrum half rolls the ball into the scrum two-handed.
Uh-huh.
It's hooked back quickly to a flanker who picks, goes and scores. Try or no try?
Hang on a minute. Presumably, if it comes out to a flanker, either the scrum's rotated or it's come out the side. So if it comes out the side, it can't be out. But there again, it could come out into the one channel and a flanker could quite easily pick it up.
It could, if it comes out of the back, as in where the eight is and the flanker picks it up, what's the issue?
Try.
This one's going to annoy you when I pick this one just because it'll make your blood boil. It's no try. Nothing to do with the flanker. A flanker can pick up at the back of a scrum.
Yeah.
Which some referees irritatingly don't realise.
Oh, is this the two-handed thing?
This is the flipping rolling. You can't roll the ball into it.
You've got to throw it in.
And I only did this one because this happened. There was a referee who penalised, gave free kicks every time a scrum half rolled rather than threw.
What?
You have to throw the ball into a scrum. You can't roll it.
Right, I remember, I knew it would wind you up.
This is what I mean. This is where, like you say, there are some laws where I agree with you. Rub it out.
Yeah.
Just let a referee, let the boys play it and see what he sees.
As long as it's in and down the middle, it's fine.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time watching, playing, reffing. In my case, I'm going to do some coaching badges. I'm sure you're going to do some coaching badges at some point, Tim. We spend a lot of time watching rugby. If we don't know this instinctively, it is not a good law. It is stupid. It's so stupid. Throwing.
I remember reading it recently because I was looking, we're having a discussion as to whether the nine has to put the ball in on one side.
And what kind of...
There's no law. You can put it on either side.
And what kind of extreme right-wing prison camp guard gives a free kick for rolling a ball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think I picked that one because I didn't think anyone would know it. And also, it is an example, picking up on what you talked about at the very start of the podcast, that there is sometimes... We make it hard for ourselves. And also, we're trying to grow the game. This is a World Cup year. There was 9 million people watched the England-France game. That's brilliant. How many of those 9 million people didn't have a flipping clue what was going on some of the time?
About 8 million?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, we're fairly knowledgeable. I reckon about 10 people understood all the laws.
Because we don't understand all the laws, and we watch an awful lot of rugby. I was at Sedgley v Calder this weekend, and the number of people shouting at the referee when the referee's made the correct decision, but just shouting, referee, you're an idiot, you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
And these are guys who are going to watch like low-level rugby. So these should be big, knowledgeable fans.
Yes, exactly.
And they have no idea.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid. However, some things do happen when you have laws, which is you have unintended consequences. And one such unintended consequence was, I don't know if you've seen it, Tim, there's a video going around of the Chiefs not rucking. Very interesting.
So this is interesting. So if the Chiefs make a tackle with a single man, that single man goes to floor and the guy carrying the ball goes to floor, then the attacking team puts one man over, but none of the Chiefs commit. So for it to be a ruck, you have to have one from both teams on their feet. So there's no ruck. So there's no offside line.
So they're dancing between like the 9 and 10 channel trying to put off the scrum off pass.
Oh, that's flipping brilliant.
So obvious,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is so obvious. It's just a loophole. But they'll
shut that down soon enough.
Oh, yeah.
They've exploited it a few times, but they've been penalised a few times because... So you can run at the 10 and you can run anywhere basically because there's no offside line. As soon as you run towards the ruck, you're then deemed to be entering not through the gate. So you can't... Right. Come round and then go towards the ruck.
And I imagine as well.
What ruck though?
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things.
I suppose if you come too close, you are then forming the ruck.
Yeah.
And they also got penalised for backing away.
Complicated. And this is the point. It's a World Cup year. We want millions of people to realise what an amazing game we've got. And you know what? That old phrase of hear me now, believe me later. I find myself.
Yeah.
With every passing week, agreeing with JB about stuff more and more.
Finally! I tell you what, it's just the way of the world, I'm afraid, Tim.
But the lawmakers have done good things. The picking up at the back of a ruck, and it's not hands-on, it's when the ball leaves the ground. That is a really simple law change that makes it better for the attacking team, that makes the game flow better.
But the more laws you make, the more unintended consequences tend to creep in. We need to scrap a lot.
I agree keeping it simple, but it's just looking at them and the practicalities of them and letting the game flow.
One good one is
that we all think should be scrapped is not straight in a line out if the defending team don't compete.
Don't compete.
If they don't compete.
As long as the jumper catches it.
Yes. You can't pass straight to the 9 if they don't compete.
Yeah, because otherwise the Chiefs would be throwing it straight to the 9 and then they'd be away.
But yeah, that's just because you lose a minute for the line out, you then lose a minute for the scrum restart. So you lost 2 minutes because of one small indiscretion that hasn't affected anything.
I was thinking the other day, what if you just got the law book and gave it to someone who's never played rugby ever, like a big legal firm, say, and just asked them to come up with how you circumvent all of these laws? Because undoubtedly, if you had a fresh pair of eyes and you were asking, well, okay, that's a ruck. Well, what is a ruck? What does that look like? You get so many loopholes. And if I had loads of money, say, like Saracens do, I probably might investigate that.
Just have a legal team poring over the laws.
This has become a little bit of a ref special, which has been good. I've enjoyed it. I have enjoyed it. It's important. I think we'd all want to reiterate is we know it's a tough job. We know that they are implementing the laws of the lawmakers. It's not a tough job, is it? And we don't want to instigate any...
Tired prop's a tough job. Reffing is not a tough job. Pointing and whistling at things.
Well, do you know what? It's a job that you get a lot of pleasure out of, I'm sure. At the moment, we don't want to have a position where referees don't enjoy doing it because they're getting heckled or criticised.
Yeah, that's right.
So. And it's so important because it allows us all to play rugby.
Yeah.
Well, not me because I'm always injured.
Yeah.
But everyone else.
So let's talk about some of the other games then over the weekend.
Saracens Harlequins, the big one at Wembley, 84,000 people.
That is a lot of people.
What? Did they pay to go? Or were they paid?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure how many people...
Because there's not Saracens fans, are they?
So Saracens normally get, 10,000-12,000?
Yeah.
Harlequins get maybe the same, 15,000?
I don't assume.
So that's 30,000. So then there's another 50,000.
Somewhere.
Do you reckon they've just rounded up a load of homeless people from the streets of London
in the Saracens Corporation van
and said, you can have a free soup and a free roll of bread if you come and watch this game, make it seem like Wembley's full.
Or maybe there's some, like, the hive mind Saracens, they've got some, I don't know.
Mind control.
They've just hit a little red button and some magnetic pulse has gone out and triggered something.
They've got
their sleeper agents.
Yeah.
Well, they do have, like, sleeper cells, don't they? Like, Seattle. Saracens, Romania.
I think there's one in Kenya.
Yeah. I'm assuming these aren't really Saracens fans. Because of the two clubs, I think Harlequins probably could get 80,000 because they're a grand old club. They're you know, they're very, very recognisable. They've got a good brand. I can kind of see Harlequins doing it, not really Saracens.
However they've done it, and it doesn't matter, that actually getting 84,000 people, even if you'd given away a bunch of free tickets or come up with some good little corporate deals or whatever, there's some effort been done. That's an impressive number of people
to
go and watch a club match.
Yes.
Have they got rid of the eagle carrying the match ball? That was one of their gimmicks. They had an eagle with a match ball.
I love Saracens' gimmick. Saracens, in fact, what's happened to all their gimmicks? They don't do nearly as many as they used to.
Remember the guy who won 500k by hitting the crossbar?
Yeah. he did it in his socks. He did it in his socks.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think he didn't even have, like, he took his shoes off because he had proper shoes on. He just did it in his socks, kicked it, like, he clearly had no skill, hit the crossbar. I think it was $250,000, not half.
Oh, was it?
But it was...
Yeah, pound here, pound there. Soon I was up to real money.
No, I take it back, though. One gimmick, the Saracens, probably the best gimmick at any rugby ground, actually, is the getting a pizza delivered to your seat.
The Domino's deal.
What about the ceremonial kickoff? Because there's a lot of lads that I play with who cannot do a drop goal or drop kick full stop. So getting some celebrity to do the ceremonial kickoff, maybe in high heels, would be hilarious.
Oh, like Diana Ross in the America World Cup.
Where the goal exploded even though the ball missed.
Well, I'll tell you what, someone who maybe after his efforts a few weeks ago for Sale Sharks, you'd think wouldn't, what might be a sort of a Mickey-taking drop goal would be Vadim Kobolash. However, in an international match, Vadim Kobolash, the tight head prop for Sale Sharks, kicked a penalty. And not just a penalty, like, in front of the sticks for a bit of a laugh. He was taking this seriously. Kicked it from 10 metres in and 30 metres back from the post.
Near the touchline.
Yeah, have a look.
And he's absolutely nailed it.
Straight through the middle.
Wow.
I've played in a team where the prop kicked and it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. You have as well, Jay.
I've watched you two play in a team where the
prop kicked. Oh, God, yeah. We beat Nantwich away, Conor Mitchell. This is a great story. So, a very, very windy pitch. And our coach, we're losing. We need this win to potentially stay up. And our coach screams over to our captain, because our kickers are off, and shouts, "Corner! Corner!" Well, corner sounds a little bit like in the wind.
Yeah.
Corner! Who is our tight head prop? So Dave Hamby, our captain, turns around to Connor and goes, "Connor, you're kicking." And Connor
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Connor slotted the goal to win the game. Connor!
Nice.
What?
Nice.
Are you sure? Yes!
Well, just quickly mention Sale, as I've mentioned Vadim Kobolash there. Another good win. Doing what they do. Grinding out wins with attritional rugby and the occasional bit of flair, usually marshalled by Danny Cipriani, and winning at home again.
Yeah.
Now, we had a little bit of a heated debate last week about Sippers versus Ford. And I've had a think about this. And I would ask, who would look more impressive if they were to switch teams?
So if Ford is at Sale and Sippers is at Bath.
Yeah, because I do not think Ford can do what Cipriani does at Sale, but I do think Cipriani can do what Ford does at Bath.
And what are you saying that Cipriani does at Sale that Ford can't do?
Defences be better, and I think...
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. Cipriani's defence has definitely improved.
Yeah.
But that only means that the commentators don't laugh anytime someone runs near him.
And also,
they don't need to stand him on the wing like they used to at the Melbourne Rebels and stuff.
You've got to remember, he's playing in a team which might be able to push for top four. I mean, that's incredible. Because earlier on the season, or maybe it was last season, they played Bath. And their entire pack had less caps than Paul James.
They probably still do.
Well, that's I think that's the success of Sale Sharks is their pack, and they've got really really promising young guys like Tommy Taylor, Josh Beaumont,
Ross Harrison,
and they've got some really really like guys that would get in probably any Premiership team like Dan Braid.
Avion Lewis Roberts, Jonathan Mills.
Not so much them, although...
No, not them.
Although
no.
In the case of Jonathan Mills, he does a really important job for that team. Just work great.
Yeah, and he shores up the scrum as well, because he's a big old lump.
We were watching the game, and then they brought on the subs. Lewis Avion Roberts came on the same time as Jonathan Mills, and I thought, yeah, Scipione's pretty good, because it's not these boys winning the game. I mean, Scipione doesn't get enough credit for what he does at Sale. And maybe because they do play a bit boring, and they have got that... very organised pack. He gets
enough credit. He was on the bench for England. I think that's plenty credit for what he's done.
Everyone just seems to. I think there's a lot of Scipione haters out there. He does an incredible job for himself.
I actually think the other way, because I actually think Myler, on balance, this season has been a better 10 than Scipione.
Oh, I'm with you, Phil.
And the media have genuinely believe that the media have influenced Lancaster for both Scipione getting in the England squad and Nick Easter getting in the England squad. Because there was a big push for both of them, and they both appeared in there.
I also think that
unmerited, in my opinion.
10 is a position where age is actually an advantage. Who plays better rugby than Charlie Hodgson? I know I go on about it all the time, but Charlie Hodgson and Gouda are really knocking on in years. Not the most athletic, and yet they do a wonderful, wonderful job. Myler is a very experienced 10, and you can see it.
Yeah.
Scipione, as he's getting older, is more of a game manager now, but he can still do those flair things.
I still think George Floyd, all round a better 10, would do better in any team. Bath, Sale, England, wherever it is.
There's only one way to find out. Swap them.
Job swap. Okay, sorry.
Or we could see how... Well, we can get the next closest thing to George Ford and see how he does it in Sale 10. Joe Ford.
Gloucester. There's a bit of a gap in between, a bit of a talent gap between those two.
Gloucester are relentlessly disappointing.
Yes.
Are just annoying. They annoy me how disappointing they are.
They're the opposite of Sale. Yeah. Sale have got a lot of average players that creates a great team, whereas Gloucester have got a lot of very good players and they create... a very disappointing team.
But in key positions, they don't have, whether it's leadership or just skill, I don't know. But
it seems to run in that club's DNA to be underachievers. You look at the players that have been through there.
I think second row is the perfect example. Sale go out and they pick up Andrei Ostrakov from a Russian.
Exactly.
Who? Exactly. And, you know, he's not a starting frontline player, but he's a unit. They pick up Jonathan Mills from London Welsh, who does a really important workmanlike job. Nothing ever glitzy, but he just works his nuts off. And they spend a bit of cash on someone with loads of experience to be a leader. Nathan Hines.
Yeah.
Gloucester spend an absolute fortune on James Hudson, who, great in the line out, soft.
Yeah.
On Tom Palmer, was good.
Yeah, the same. Good in the line out, soft.
And they've got these guys, Elliot Stook.
Savage.
They just don't kind of... They're like all very good pieces of the wrong jigsaw. Like, they just don't fit together. It doesn't make any sense. it's just something in the DNA of that club. They're just underachievers, I'm afraid to say. And also, something far worse, which is...
willing it to change, because it's a brilliant club. I love it.
Something far worse, though, which people don't talk about, is how bad that kit is.
It's awful.
The kit clash today at the AJ Bell was enough to make a grown man cry.
Yeah, that's horrible. I don't mind the Sale kit, but the Gloucester kit is...
Oh, come on, it's got a shark spin on it. What do you need a shark spin on your kit for?
Yeah. Magna Clean and that... Oh, it is an ugly kit. Really is. It was never uglier than when Freddie Burns would wear it. Not because he's... Nothing to do with him being good-looking or not, just purely his stature, his diminutive... style
loose
with it being really baggy, loose on the arms,
I don't like the way the top merges into the shorts. I know going on about it, but they've already got the blueprint. Navy shorts.
Navy shorts.
Red, Red and white.
Hoops.
Maybe.
Full hoops, yeah, all the way round.
Well, how hard is it?
Yeah.
You know, they did it in the 80s. Surely they can find someone who used to work in a cotton mill who knows how to make full hoops. You know, they put men on the moon, just have your hoops. There's also sale. You want to see what a sale kit should look like, nip down to Haywood Road and you'll see sale the hilariously named sale amateurs, who wear, well, guess what? White and blue hoops.
Hoops look good.
So easy.
I think we need to just simplify. And we were talking about a golden age of stash, but I think Leicester's stash has gone downhill. That orange get-up is yeah. ugly. I don't like their home kit as much as their old home kit.
I do. I like both.
Do you know the story behind the orange kit?
Green.
The story behind the orange kit?
Yeah. Apparently those are the original colours.
Yeah, from 1900s.
Yeah, but I can't imagine a dank, you know, squalid industrial city, people wearing, you know, rave orange to play rugby. I just don't think it happened.
No, it's handy because you finish the game, they can just put one white glove on, get their whistle on, and go to an illegal rave out of the countryside.
Yeah. But the home kit is excellent, so they get a pass on that.
Mm. Yeah, I really like that home kit. Yeah. That British Racing green, the dark greens with white and red.
Who makes it? Because they do a phenomenal job. Just it looks well built.
Yeah,
robust.
It does look very well built.
Yeah, whoever makes that kit, I would have them make my kit if I had a team.
Me too.
Damn right.
London Welsh have been relegated. That's a terrible kit.
Oh my God. Yeah, they've got scales on. Why?
Yeah. That's not going to be in anyone's scrapbook of memories, is it, that this season?
For London Welsh.
Oh, it will be, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Oh, that will live long in the memory. What won't live long in the memory are teams that come up like Leeds. I can't remember a single season that Leeds had. I can't remember one of their games. Terrible. They come up, horrible kit, go back down.
Yeah. Can we just quickly go back to the Harlequin Saracens game?
Go on.
I think there's two talking points from this.
Go on.
First of all, Rob Shaw and Billy Vunipola both played every minute of the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. Both started for their teams. Now, Rob Shaw started, Marler started as well. I can kind of understand Harlequins because they want a shot of beating Saracens and they've not got a game next week because they're not in the European Champions Cup. Billy Vunipola, they're travelling to, is it Racing?
I think it is
this
Racing.
Weekend coming up.
Yeah.
For a change, we're actually playing well. Racing never usually play well. They're kind of mid-table, but at the moment, I think they're second on it.
And Saracens are playing against Quins.
It's an interesting decision to play.
Do you reckon there was an element of big occasion, money talks? We've got a lot of big important corporate backers here in the ground, and
maybe
business came first.
I'd hate to think so, because if he underperforms next weekend and get knocked out of the Champions Cup, or God forbid he picks up an injury because he's just playing too much rugby, yeah, then that's a much bigger issue.
Saracens are one of the most diligent clubs in the land. They've got
injury prevention and statistic analysis, yeah, and that kind of stuff.
If they didn't think he was ready to go, he wouldn't go. And they've got so many other options. And there's no point in having massive squad depth if you don't use it.
He has only played two games in the last four weekends. That was the third game in five weekends.
Yeah. But it was the third game on the bounce, three consecutive weekends, where he has played 80 minutes, and international games.
But it is his job.
Tough. It is, yes.
No. So, no.
But the bigger talking point, well, not the bigger talking point, but something I find interesting is Chris Wiles scored two tries, got man of the match.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a first choice player for Saracens.
Nope.
If all their back line is fit, is there a more important reserve, a more influential
Ooh,
reserve?
That's a great question.
A better reserve in the Premiership than Chris Wiles?
Because
he plays anywhere in the back row, 11 to 15.
He can play international standard 11 to 15, and he's first choice reserve in every single one of those positions for Saracens.
Oh, that's a good question. I'd give you one, Ed, running close, same nationality, Blaine Scully. Very important. Although he's going to
Cardiff. Not as important, because I don't think he can do a job in the centres.
He can play 13.
Yeah.
13 outside backs. But yeah. Does Wales play 12 as well?
Yeah, he played 12 this weekend. No, it was him at 12, Marcelo Boffer at 13.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good shout.
I can't think of a more influential.
Yeah, I was racking my brain.
I was going to say Elliot Daly, but he's a starter.
Yeah, starter.
Oh, young James Wilson. Because he plays 10, he plays fullback.
Banners!
There we go. Can you believe you played for England once?
Yeah, more than once.
Yeah. He was an actual third. He was actually the best winger that England had. And he's not a bad player, but still.
I think you're right. You've nailed it. Chris Wilds is the most important squad player in the Premiership.
Facts. Well done, Phil. Good one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, for all the people like to talk about, and particularly fans of other clubs like to talk about Saracens spending loads of money, where did Chris Wilds come from?
America.
Nottingham.
Nottingham.
Isn't he American?
Yes, he is American. They signed him from the Championship.
Isn't he really English? Like, he grew up here, went to school here.
Don't know.
He's not
Tim?
I don't know.
Don't know. If you know anything about Chris Wilds, let us know.
Yeah. Chris, are you come on, are you really Canadian?
No, he's not American.
Are you really American, Chris? Come on. Own up. It's hotting up, isn't it? Four rounds to go. Look at that table. Let Exeter 54 points. They'll be disappointed. That was a showdown, that match.
Yeah. They blew up, to be fair. They could have won it.
25-18. A losing bonus point was important.
Some wonderful, wonderful stuff by Leicester, though. Miles Benjamin was outstanding again. he gave one pass. I saw some highlights. He gave a pass.
One pass.
And then he cleared out a ruck. There was no one around after. A very clean ball for the scrum half. He's a great player.
What was your tweet about Miles Benjamin this week?
Imagine if you could combine the speed of Wade and the power of George North. I already have. Miles Benjamin.
Dan Cole may be celebrated in the clubhouse after Leicester's victory with a bit of a sing-song.
Was it for England last week?
No, no, no.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, maybe he did. Because we definitely know that he likes a bit of a sing-song. As we learnt from his 50th cap after the France match at Twickenham, he turned up in the bar, him and Nick Easter, the pair of them. They both getting their 50th caps, as that was it. They both had their red England ties undone, top button undone. They clearly been, you know, loosened up a little bit. And this is Dan Cole.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy here. Gonna run out the lane with a happy, happy, happy refrain. I'm singing, just singing in the rain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Matt Stevens is safe.
We know we love a bit of rugby okey, and lots of rugby players like to sing. Do you want to hear Nick Easter's 50th cap song?
May as well. 50th birthday song, did you say?
What did you say, Jay? Just then?
50th birthday song, did you say?
I missed that. That was quite good.
Thanks,
mate. Just stick a pony in your pocket and fix a suitcase from the van. Because if you want the best, then you don't ask questions. Hey, brother, I'm a man. And where it comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons or the tides and the seas. Because you're the one that's driving me berserk. Why do you want to call the nonsense work?
La 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 la.
That's brilliant.
La 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 la. La 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 la. He's even doing the old arms. East End
Pendulum
jig.
Arms.
East End jig.
I've got to say, that's probably that's the most enjoyable rugby okey I've heard, actually.
It's pretty good. One thing I liked about this as well, so Dan Cole and Nick Easter have stood on a stage, and the host for the post-match thing in the players' lounge and this
bar, I wonder who it is
Martin Bayfield.
Bayfs!
Look at Dan Cole on a stage next to Martin Bayfield not on a stage. They're the same height.
Is there any more alpha male than Bayfs? He's the alpha male of alpha males.
Yeah, what I like about him as an alpha male is he doesn't have to be outwardly alpha male. He can be soft.
He's ultra alpha.
He's like that Nick Cummins, you know, tread softly but carry a big stick.
Exactly.
Bayfield is one massive log.
Yeah, so like any England player, in fact, anyone from BT Sports, like any of the like the commentators and the pundits, Delario and all the rest of it, all of them look up to Bayfield.
Yeah.
He's just literally
in every,
he's just the man,
in
isn't
every
he?
Sense of the words.
So. No, thanks. Yeah. Great.
We should talk about the weekend's rugby coming up. So actually, I didn't see any Super Rugby this weekend. I've been working and drinking and lots of other stuff. I didn't see any Super Rugby. I didn't see any Pro 12.
Let me have a think.
I
saw some Pro 12. I can talk about the Pro 12.
Go on.
I watched it for 5 minutes before the the kickoff of
the
Northampton game, and Cardiff conceded within 3 minutes. And the commentator said something along the lines of, Cardiff should be very, very happy with their defensive stand. So I was just thinking, is this the standard that Cardiff keep someone out for 3 minutes and they should be happy with that. I immediately turned over. I was done with the Pro 12 for another weekend.
There was a brilliant game in the Pro 12.
Apparently so.
Leinster Glasgow, repeat of last year's final. That was, unfortunately, I've not been able to get the highlights anywhere because Pro 12's website is backwards and they don't upload it, or they hadn't uploaded it last time I checked.
I'm not entirely sure that they even have broadband in some of the places that they play.
Anyway, Leinster rests a lot of their players, a lot of their island players, as did Glasgow, but it ended up being an unbelievable 34-all draw in which Glasgow, the away team, went 27-7 up and Leinster pulled it right back, and then Glasgow scored a try with 5 minutes to go to tie the game.
They're starting to develop a really interesting rivalry there.
Yeah, really good rivalry. Potentially those two will be top four again, going for that final spot.
I have to say, I've fully bought into Glasgow now, being a good team.
Yes.
I like what they do. Very well coached.
It's very humble of you to finally admit that, Jay.
Yeah, well, the only thing I can see going wrong here is Gregor Townsend getting poached for Scotland. It can't be long. I mean, Vern Carter's going to stay for a couple of years. It's going to be underwhelming. After the World Cup, he will probably go back to the top 14 because he'll be worth a fortune there. And Gregor Townsend must be Scotland coach.
Yeah, he'll be in the running, won't he?
Definitely.
I can't see any other way.
Yeah.
At Super Rugby, there was one little showdown that is going to make me do this. A couple of gentlemen that... We'd be on a pony trek up a mountain. Sorry, horseback trek up a mountain to pitch a tent and catch some salmon in the river.
They
cook them on a fire that they made themselves. Kieran Reid and Pierre Spiess had a showdown. Two number eights. Pierre Spiess quite often, looks incredible. Kieran Reid is incredible. Pierre Spiess played an absolute blinder for the Blue Bulls.
Is that right?
And they beat the Crusaders. And there was a picture of the two of them on PSB's Twitter account, just going, great to catch up with my old buddy Kieran Reid. What a great matchup today. Always an honour to play against him and PSB's. I mean, if there was a competition for who looks incredible in their get-up, it's PSB's.
Well, you know
what a specimen.
You know my saying about PSB's? He's too talented to be any good. So that's why he never achieves his full potential.
He's a bit like...
That's the work.
He's a bit like some of those guys. There's always people in the gym when you go that just... look phenomenal, Lev, like you've put a lot of effort in there over years to graph that, but if you said, right, your bus is just about to leave, quick, go and get it, they'd sort of awkwardly waddle down the road and miss it.
Yes.
Not athletic.
Yes.
Have you seen Pierre Spiess's video when he jumps onto a very high surface?
Yeah, the like 150 centimetre box jump.
Wow.
It's quite high. Yeah,
Pretty high.
Especially when you weigh like 118 kilograms.
No, he's a monster.
He's unbelievably quick and unbelievably strong. He just... has he got that rugby brain?
Is he any good? Yeah, he's very good. Without trying, he can be an international rugby player. Imagine if you could merge Kieran Reid's rugby mind and his physicality.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
That would be frightening.
But of course, you don't need to develop any kind of rugby ability... rugby knowledge... if you're that physically imposing.
America is so, it's even to the point where they go, yeah, you play a great game, but your hands aren't big enough, you won't be able to do your job in the NFL.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy, like, how long your arms are and how big your hands are.
Have you seen not the rookie symposium, it is the day before the combine, and they have all the players just in their underwear. And these creepy middle-aged men are there writing things, and they're literally touching them and measuring them, and
like doing a purple ackee.
Very, very similar. Very similar.
That's a reference for people in the Northwest. If you know anyone from the Northwest, just ask them about purple ackee. I don't want to explain it.
He was sighted in Llandudno not so long ago.
I saw him in Manchester City Centre a couple of months ago.
Let's not get into this.
Let's not get into this.
There is a story, just going back to the size thing, about...
thank God, not going back to purple ackee.
Back to purple ackee. About Michael Jordan when he was like 13 or 14 being overlooked for the county trials because he was only 6'2".
Jesus. how tall was Michael Jordan? Michael Jordan?
6'5".
Wow. Excitingly, I don't know if it's definitely going to happen, but we might have a nice little crossover podcast with certain someone who used to play in the NFL soon, so we'll see if we can arrange that.
Could not be more vague if you tried.
Yes.
Just hinting.
Yeah. Very.
A possibility that something might be moving towards.
Yeah, it's a podcast which I'm very excited to do if we ever do it.
We should get into talking about the weekend's games, because we go from a weekend of international rugby that was incredible to a, I don't know, I'd classify this weekend's Premiership Rugby as mediocre overall.
Some good games, some very good performances.
Well, 20 minutes of amazing rugby.
Very exciting stuff, but yeah, not as exciting as... We've been spoilt by Super Saturday in Six Nations.
I'm hoping for more of that. The tension is going to go up a notch again with these European matches.
Yes. Now. European matches.
Quarterfinals.
So we all have... a bit of a bias towards the England teams in the European matches.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
there are four of them.
You will notice there are four, more than obviously any other nation. There's three French and one...
And there's one from the Hobby League as well, isn't there?
One Irish. All of the English teams are playing away.
Okay.
Which got me thinking, what kind of chance do those English... Do we have of getting one English team through?
I think Bath go through.
So I've... Well, just purely from a statistical point of view, I've run the numbers.
Oh, ooh. Here we go.
Ah,
this
yes!
This is what we love Phil for. Go on. You're like the... In fact, I'm going to get this up, because you are like... Now Walter White is with chemicals and science. That's you with numbers. You just see them. They just appear in front of you.
I actually dropped a box of matches the other day, and he just instantly said there's 205 there.
I'm not Rain Man, Jay.
Go on, then.
Right, so the last 10 years, what do you reckon the percentage of away wins in the knockout stages of the Heineken Cup have been?
So, there's always in quarterfinals. So, four a year. So, we're talking about 40 matches.
Quarterfinals and semifinals.
Okay, so... Takeaway
60 matches.
10. 60 matches. Oh, yeah.
60 matches over the 10 years.
60 mm-hmm. matches. How many away wins? I'm gonna guess that there has been...
You're going through all the games in your head.
I almost reckon there'd be more away wins. But the semifinals, they're not neutral then.
Nope.
No, they're not, are they?
They're not.
And how do they come up with who's a home and who's away? Is it based
seeded.
On the seeded?
Seeded in
where
the pool. In the pool stages?
12.
Yeah, about that.
12 out of 60, you reckon?
So yeah, I'm going for 48 home wins.
I can tell you, there's actually...
You're thinking similar then?
About that, I'd say 9, isn't that?
There's actually 20 out of 40. No, sorry, 20 out of 60. So...
One third.
Yeah, exactly one third, 67%. However, if you split it... For the first 5 years of that, and then the second 5 years of that, so 2005 to 2009, it was 13 out of 30. So it was almost 50-50 over that period. And then the last 5 years, it's 7 out of 30. So
wow,
almost 80%, so almost 1 in 5, one in five of the more recent matches. So you're getting a trend of the home teams being stronger. And those last 5 years... How many England teams have won away in those 5 years?
Northampton didn't manage it when they played in Munster.
Did Saracens win at Claremont?
They won in Claremont. No, that wasn't in Claremont, was it?
No, it was at Wembley, I think.
Yeah.
It was at Wembley when they destroyed them 46-6.
That was an awesome, awesome game.
I can't think of one.
I can tell you there was one.
Go on.
And it was a travesty of justice.
Leicester at Ulster.
Saracens at Ulster.
Saracens at Ulster.
Paingate.
Paingate. So it took a
circle.
So in the last 5 years, England's only away victory in the knockout stages of the European Cup has been a game when there was a
red card in the first.
Of a red card in the first 10 minutes.
Yes, precisely. So,
on that basis, on what you've just said, you would say that an English team would be defying all odds that you can come up with in recent times to get even one of the teams through.
Yeah, you say, so the last 5 years, it's been one in five away victories, but only one England team when it's been a red card. So it is unlikely. And when you look at the matchups, so Wasps travelling to Toulon.
Yeah. Well done, good journey, bearing in mind they qualified through the back door.
Do you know, Wasps, they could be... A little bit tricky for...
They'll be tricky, but no.
I don't think they'll win.
No.
It'll be interesting to see if Nathan Hughes plays.
They're pretty much faster than everyone. and they're very, very strong. I mean,
I don't think strength is something Toulon will be worried about with any team they face.
Yeah. No, I guess not. But speed should.
So yeah. I can't see.
Andy Goode.
I can't see Wasps.
No, I can't see Wasps doing it.
Winning
I can
that.
See Bath winning.
Bath travelling to Leinster.
Yep.
Now, Leinster have been able to rest most of their Ireland players in the
as
week.
As did
week
Bath today.
Mm. Yeah, Bath have rested quite a few.
Against London Welsh.
So that'll be an interesting game. I think that's probably the best chance of an England
team. You don't think Saracens have got a good chance?
Saracens going to Racing. Racing, number one seed, top of the group. They absolutely destroyed Northampton home and away. Northampton, who are currently top in the bench.
That is true.
Interesting, just on the Racing Metro one, interesting the rumours circulating about Jamie Roberts signing for Harlequins.
I think there's some evil things that go on down south in the Welsh press. I think they just make up rumours, you know, and start. Because it's so inward-looking. They've got nothing really else to talk about. I think they just keep on circulating rumours about Jamie Roberts.
Do you not think that would be the perfect solution? Because we've talked so many times when we talk about Harlequins how they need a centre, a real quality centre, and it would completely change their team, as well as a couple of forwards.
Jamie Roberts
a couple
is a very unusual
well,
player. And they've got Adam Jones and Jamie Roberts.
Well, Jamie Roberts is a very unusual player. In that, I think you need to build everything. You can't just put him into a team and say, "Here, Jamie, go and do X, Y, Z."
Yeah, but the perfect. You got Nick Evans. His power's starting to wane.
Yeah,
you can. It's like we'll change the game plan, Nick. We'll just mean you just stand there, kick, and then just release
Jamie Roberts.
Jamie Roberts play flat and get him.
Now you know why the rumour started, maybe. Don't you?
Nope.
Because
was he wearing multicoloured tops or something?
Seen hanging out with Hugo Monia.
Yeah.
No. It was because he's apparently looking at doing a postgraduate course at Oxford University.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for me, doesn't shout Harlequins. It only says one thing.
London Welsh.
That would make perfect sense.
What London Welsh need.
Yes, they do.
That would really show
they
that.
They really do need Jamie Roberts.
Really show that back line.
Do you think it would improve their team? Oh, yeah, I think it probably would.
You know, I still go back to this. The most hilarious comment made, maybe in all of rugby, was the very disingenuous statement by the group of directors of rugby that said, Whippoo, Barkley, Molnar and May. Who wants to play against them?
Me.
I do.
Experience, creative force. Yes.
What experience? Well, I don't know. Experience. Got that bit. What creative force, though?
So, going back to the quarterfinals.
So, you think Racing Metro are like nailed on?
I don't think they're nailed on, but I do think that Bath are the best chance of an England victory. I would give Bath more chance travelling to Leinster than I would Saracens travelling to Racing.
The thing is, you've got to remember that down in Saracens now, they've got men in white coats working in a lab who should be, you know, developing the next cancer drug. But all they're doing at the moment is working out strategies and ways to beat Racing. So do not be surprised.
But then I still think Leinster are comfortable favourites in the Bath game. It's England's best chance, but I still think Leinster having that core of Six Nations winning Irish players. They've got Keane Healy back. They've got Sean O'Brien back. They've got Heaslip back. They're still going to be favourites.
Am I going to get in trouble if I say I don't think Keane Healy's that good?
Yeah.
Recently, I just don't... I mean, come back from injury.
He's only played about four games in the last six months.
But everyone raves about him. And I want to see more production and less chat.
You're just thinking about that drop ball in Wales's 5-metre line, aren't you?
Well,
that's the only thing you're thinking about.
One of many things. But, yeah.
No. What other things?
Well, I just think... Because he's such an outgoing character, he gets a lot of media coverage, and he looks so good.
Right, you would get in trouble for that, but I actually reckon most people are going to ignore it, because they'll go, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. We will get in trouble if we don't mention London Irish against Newcastle. Completely forgot to mention the game.
Oh, yeah.
22 points to 21.
And your brother played.
We did mention your brothers.
We mentioned that.
The Welsh rugby dynasty.
Yeah, we mentioned that at the start. All right, fair enough. Fine, we can move on.
What was the score?
22-21.
That's right.
Good win.
Basically, a soft start from. Summary is soft start from Newcastle. London Irish capitalised. London Irish only had three chances to score, and they scored three tries, and it was all Newcastle, and they basically shot themselves in the foot. And London Irish defended well. That's it. Okay, cool.
One more thing that I just found out today. Mm-hmm. The Premiership player with the worst disciplinary record of all time was playing in that game.
Oh, Epi Tione.
was playing in that game. Oh, right. That specific game.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Let me have a look. Worst disciplinary record. That's a great.
I can tell you 16 nope. yellow cards and 2 reds.
Tuilagi?
Nope.
Alassane? No.
Nope.
Because I'm thinking he must have played for a long time to be to have that many.
Let's go.
I can tell you it's a nope. It's a forward.
Yeah, because
Chris Ashton equaled Dellon Armitage's record of most yellow cards for a back this weekend in 10. But it's a forward playing in that game.
Oh, who got the yellow cards? There was yes.
Who is it?
Oh, I think he's an amazing player, despite his disciplinary form.
Here we go.
David Pace.
Correct.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yeah.
I would never have got that.
Yeah.
Really? He's the worst.
The worst. 16 yellows and 2 reds.
Oh, God.
So do you remember his fight against, who was it? He looked very sheepish afterwards. Played for Gloucester.
Jim Hamilton, was it?
Jim Hamilton.
Yeah. I remember that.
Didn't go...
He should have attacked his lack of calves.
Yeah. I did not put too fine a point on it. It didn't go... all his own way, did it, that fight. Really? Not how he intended.
Not how he intended.
So the final quarter-final game that we've not discussed, Claremont-Northampton.
Mm. See, I looked at it and my reaction was, that could be the one English team.
Do you reckon?
No, I don't think any of them are going to go through. I think it's going to be four home wins.
I don't know which of the French teams will lose, but I do think...
two English through...
Two English, wow. One team will beat a French team.
Put money on two English going through. I think you get really good odds on that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right.
All of the home teams will be considerable favourites going into this.
And Bath definitely to win. Bath are just too good.
Leinster are too good.
No, Bath are too good.
I think Claremont have only lost once at home to Leinster in 2012, whenever it was, in the last God knows how many matches. Mm. So, yeah, I can't see Claremont losing at home. I think they'll just be too good. So I'd say, unfortunately, there'd be no English teams in the semi-final.
Do we need to talk about the Challenge Cup?
Not really. No.
It has got to the quarter-final stage as well.
Let's talk about the final. If it's any good, we'll recap it.
The games, Gloucester play Connacht.
Not interested.
Newport Punk, Dragons play Cardiff Blues.
Absolutely awful.
Exeter, Newcastle. That could be quite interesting.
Okay.
Newcastle have now added Sonotti to their European squad, because he wasn't in there originally.
What?
Remarkably. And London Irish, Edinburgh.
How do they not include him?
I don't know whether it was like resting him or, because they want him playing every minute of the Premiership, and that's obviously the most important thing, or certainly wasn't at the start of the season.
Yeah.
There'll definitely be one English team definitely through to the semi-finals.
Yes.
Exeter or Newcastle.
And then you've got two others playing at home. Yeah, so you could have three English clubs in the semi-final there.
I'm not interested in this lower league stuff at all. It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, not so much. The final, I'll watch, and that'll be interesting, but...
It's like why haven't they got a game on Thursdays as well? I'm a bit annoyed
about that. There's no Thursday game. That's the only thing that that this competition has going for it.
this competition.
Yeah.
So Friday night, the only game is Gloucester-Connacht.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Because they're not having a Friday night Highland Cup game?
Two on Saturday, two on Sunday.
Isn't it Good Friday? It's a waste of an opportunity.
Yeah.
Hang on, there is something going on here. Bath were meant to play. I think the Bath game got moved because you can't drink in Dublin on a certain day over Easter.
Because
it's to do with some fairy tales which are celebrating at that time.
Because the licensing.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I think that might have been moved from the Friday. I think.
It's 2:15 on the Saturday. The Bath.
There you go.
Game.
That is why.
There we go. We'll finish with it.
Fact.
Well, I take that fact back. I think we need to verify that as well. Particularly, I would say fact about the fairy tales, but that might be a really incendiary point.
Yeah.
We should keep an open mind. Right. I think we're done.
Welcome to the fence.
I agree with you, Tim. Open mind.
Let's go home.
Shall we? Yeah.
Perfect.
There's nothing else to do, is there? No. Download the Acast app, listen to the podcast on your smartphone through the app, and also iTunes, subscribe there. We will deliver every episode to you. Thanks very much. Leave your feedback with iTunes reviews and all the rest of it. Just to give you a little heads up, the podcast might sound different over the next couple of weeks because JB's outraged. Me and Phil have a life outside of the podcast.
Unbelievable.
Sorry about that.
It's once a week, lads.
So, Tim, you're going away to Greece.
I am.
To fix the economy, or?
among other things, yeah.
Lend us some money.
I'm in Wales this coming weekend, and then travelling to... I'm doing some rugby scouting in Vietnam for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Going to see Hanoi Dragons Rugby Club play,
Really?
Nice. Just look them up. See, I'll try and get down there.
Yeah, do it.
If we have any listeners in Vietnam, let me know if there's any rugby that's worth watching.
Greece national rugby team.
Oh, me and Jay, when we were in Cyprus a couple of years ago, had a few beers with one of the Cypriot rugby clubs watching the Lions.
Crusaders.
Anyone in Greece, get yourself down. Get yourself down to the beach. Have a bit of beach rugby going on
anywhere in Greece.
Somewhere, I'll be there. Just let me know where the game is, and I'll be there.
Well, seeing as I'm travelling from North Vietnam to South Vietnam, basically, let me know, and I'll see if I can. I've not got any hotels booked, so just let me know, and I'll see if I can swing by.
Good shout. So it might sound different because we will be recording, hopefully, from the International Rugby Centre.
But we will...
Your basement.
Yes.
But the podcast will be continuing. It just, just quick heads up. It will be no less brilliant, but might sound a bit different. But anyway, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Nice one, JB.
Bye-bye.
Nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.